Good evening. It's just 6 p.m. the top of the hour here on WEFT Champagne 90.1 FM. And of course, as always, you can always stream us online at weft.org. And of course, as I've mentioned, as hopefully you know by now, WEFT also has a brand new way to listen to WEFT. Before I go any further about that, the song you just heard was Otis Blue, Otis Redding, Sing Soul. Kind of thought I'd play that, given that it's February, it's Black History Month, so I'll be playing a lot of Black musicians here on WEFT 90.1 FM, as we have such a great selection of music. This is where we are at. My name is Ben. Just to let you know that the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT Champaign, Prairie Air Incorporated, Station Management, the Board of Directors, or the WEFT Associates. As I mentioned before, there is a new way to listen to WEFT. You can still listen to us here on your radio at 90.1 FM, and of course streaming us online at weft.org. But you can also stream the station, listen to it on the new WEFT app, which is available for both iPhones and Android phones. Just go to the Apple App Store or Google's Play Store and search for WEFT FM. Download the app and you can listen to WEFT live anytime from anywhere in the world. Plus, you can go back and listen to shows in the archives, discover recent playlists, find community information, make a donation, and even record a message or a request and send it directly to WEFT. It's a whole new way to WEFT. And do you have an old car, truck, motorcycle, or boat that you would like to get rid of? Any condition, and it doesn't have to be a clunker. Donate any old vehicle to charitable adult rides and services and designate WEFT to receive the proceeds from your gift. All you need is a clear title. Charitable Adult Rides and Services will pick it up and haul it away with no charge to you. Make arrangements on the website at careasy.com or call 855-500-RIDE. That's 855-500-7433. Remember to tell them that you want WEFT to receive the proceeds. And of course, if you would like to make, since we are a volunteer run, station, which means we are only able to keep running keep the station going because of our listeners and our donations from our listeners and audience. You can mail your financial support to WEFT 90.1 FM, PO Box 1223, Champaign, Illinois, zip code 61824. You can also go set up a payment plan of your financial support at www.weft.org. There should be a blue donate now that you click on, and then you fill out all that necessary information. Check on the weather. It was kind of warm today. It got up all the way up into the 60s, and then it's going to drop all the way to the the 30s, get down to 35 tonight, and tomorrow will be pretty cold. It'll be 29 degrees around 7 a.m., 31 degrees for those who are getting up for work or for class. First, And then it will be all the way up into 38 degrees around the afternoon, and then drop down into upper 20s tomorrow night. And other than that, looking, there is a pretty high chance of rain Wednesday evening, 4 or 5 p.m., of some light rain. And I do believe, as what the forecast is saying, is that there is a 71% chance of rain, freezing rain, on Saturday, that the 8th. So be on the lookout for that, on Saturday the 8th, of a high chance of freezing rain on Saturday. Let's see. Don't see. If you want to check out what's going on at the Rose Bowl Tavern, they have a lot of live music venues. Go to Rose Bowl Tavern. I believe they're in Urbana. Rose Bowl Tavern. RoseBowlTavern.com. They do live music 7 days a week. Sometimes they have ticketed events. I believe tonight. Let's see what's going on tonight at the Rose Bowl Tavern. Jason Finkelman presents Improvisers Exchange. And then, as usual, the Urbana Hootenanny. Trivia Night is on Wednesday. And then on 7:30 p.m. to 10 p.m., Larry Gray Guitar Accordion Trio is before that, 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Again, that's on Wednesday the 5th. Jazz Jam, 10 p.m. to 12 a.m. on Wednesday. And then see you folks in winter weekend, 5 p.m. to 11 p.m. on Friday, this Friday. That's the 7th. And then that will continue until Saturday. See you folks in Roots winter weekend from 12 p.m. to 11 p.m. on Saturday. So, and for more of the who's playing and when, go to RoseBowlTavern.com. And as usual, I like to mention the Champaign County Regional Planning Commission, where you can schedule, if you go to ccrpc.org, the website for Champaign County Regional Planning Commission, you can go to their schedule. You right away at their front page, there'll be a notification about LIHEAP, low income home eating and energy, home energy assistance. And then you can fill out all the necessary information for those who are struggling to pay with their heating bills. We are still technically in winter, although today was one of those exceptions where we got a quite warm February, which guess that tends to happen now. But if you are still someone who needs some help with, as we try to get through the rest of this winter, with your heating bill, you can check out again the low income home energy assistance, which is also, if you go to divisions and community services, and then low income home energy assistance, that's one way. At the ccrpc.org. They also have a number of other programs. Champaign Continuum of Services provides to the homeless, homeless prevention rent assistance, homeless services, HUD housing counseling services, senior services, summer cooling program, which when summer comes around, that will be handy, I'm sure. Transportation assistance, and a number of other things. And again, all this information is at ccrpc.org. And that's essentially all I have planned for you in terms of announcements. What I have next is the Bradcast with Brad Friedman. Just a reminder that the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of a speaker and do not necessarily represent those of WEFT Champaign, Prairie Air Incorporated, Station Management, the Board of Directors, or the WEFT Associates. So here is the Bradcast with Brad Friedman.
But why it happened, and to recommend changes to prevent it from happening again. Now, we will not be determining the probable cause of the accident while we are here on scene, nor will we speculate about what may have caused this accident.
Huh. Well, that sounds responsible. Thank you.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right. I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair, and I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA and coast to coast and around the globe. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me, from bradblog.com, now in our 22nd year of troublemaking and muckraking, thanks to listeners like you. Thanks for joining us today. Yes, Donald Trump, I am sure you will be stunned to learn, is even willing to politicize a national tragedy, a plane crash, even before all of the bodies from that crash have been pulled out from the water. We will be joined shortly by a guest to discuss something completely different, mostly, but given the horrific events of the past, 18 hours or so, we need to begin here. As I'm sure you have heard by now, a mid-air collision in Washington, D.C. on Wednesday night between an Army helicopter and an American Airlines flight from Kansas has killed all 67 people on board both of the aircrafts. That, according to officials on Thursday, and what is being described as the country's worst aviation disaster in a generation. As we go to air, as recovery operations continue at this hour, at least 28 bodies, including all three soldiers who were on the helicopter, have been pulled from the icy waters of the Potomac River, where both aircrafts plunged after the collision. The cause, however, remains unclear at this hour. The National Transportation Safety Board, or NTSB, who you heard at the top there, said it was too soon to even speculate and pledged to release a preliminary report within 30 days. Officials said flight conditions were clear on Wednesday night. The jet coming from Wichita was making a routine landing at Ronald Reagan National Airport in D.C. when the helicopter appears to have flown directly into its path. The identities of the victims are just now beginning to emerge at this hour. Passengers on the flight included a group of young figure skaters and their coaches and family members who were returning from a development camp following the U.S. Figure Skating Championships in Wichita. According to an FAA report obtained by AP highlighting air traffic control staffing on Wednesday night, staffing was, quote, not normal in the air traffic control tower at the time of the crash. According to the report obtained just within the past hour, one air traffic controller was working two positions at the time of the crash for some reason. Quote, the position configuration was not normal for the time of day and volume of traffic, the report says. So even now, as I said, about 18 hours or so after the incident, very little is known about what actually caused this horrific disaster. That said, there are a few things that we do know that, frankly, I might not have even bothered to take the time with at all at this this early, since, you know, at least in my opinion, it is far too early to place blame anywhere, much less political blame. That said, given what the President of the United States did earlier today in the wake of this tragedy, well, I guess it got little choice. So we'll start here. On January 20th, not even 2 weeks ago, on Inauguration Day, the day that Donald Trump was sworn into a second term in office, the director of the Federal Aviation Administration, the FAA, Mike Whitaker, stepped down just 1 year into his five-year term after facing relentless criticism and pressure from Trump's friend, billionaire benefactor, and apparent co-president Elon Musk for not approving missions by Musk's company, SpaceX, quickly enough, apparently, as Popular Info's Jed Legum reports today. The Senate had confirmed Whitaker unanimously back in 2023. Whitaker's deputy also stepped down after the head of the FAA was pushed out by Trump. No acting FAA head was appointed in his stead. On January 21, the White House put a hiring freeze in place, prohibiting the replacement of open government positions or the creation of new ones while the administration evaluates reductions in the workforce, which we will discuss with my guest momentarily. The White House said it planned to release a memorandum with further guidance within 90 days. But in aviation circles, according to Aviation International News on January 22nd, that had drawn criticism from lawmakers as the FAA has been ramping up the hiring of air traffic controllers. But as of January 21, the administration had put a freeze on hiring much-needed new ones. According to a story from AP on that same day on January 21, Trump's first full day in office, President Donald Trump moved quickly to remake the Department of Homeland Security on Tuesday, firing the head of the Transportation Security Administration before his term was up, and eliminated all the members of a key aviation security advisory group. Members of the Aviation Security Advisory Committee received a memo that day on Tuesday saying that the department is eliminating the membership of all advisory committees as part of a, quote, commitment to eliminating the misuse of resources and ensuring that DHS activities prioritize our national security. The Aviation Security Committee, which was mandated by Congress after the 1988 Pan Am 103 bombing over Lockerbie, Scotland, will technically continue to exist, but as AP noted that day, it will not have any members to carry out the work of examining safety issues at airlines and airports. Quote, I naively thought, oh, they're not going to do anything in the new administration to put security at risk, aviation security at risk, but I'm not so sure, said Stephanie Bernstein, whose husband was killed in the Lockerbie bombing and served on that committee that had been disbanded. The memo that announced the terminations said that future committee activities will be focused on, quote, advancing our critical mission to protect the homeland and support DHS's strategic priorities, but the group now has no members. Adding to Bernstein's concern, AP noted at the time, is the fact that the TSA administrator, David Pekoski, was fired even though he was originally appointed by Donald Trump during his first term and was in the middle of what was supposed to be Pekoski's second five-year term in the job after he was reappointed by Joe Biden and confirmed by the Senate. No reason was given for his departure, but in an unrelated news release Tuesday about the restarting of a program which is often referred to as Remain in Mexico, immigration-related program, DHS highlighted Pekoski's role in attempting to terminate that policy at a time when he was acting secretary at the beginning of the Biden administration. Pekoski held that acting post before Alejandro Mayorkas was confirmed by the Senate. So the head of the Transportation Security Administration was fired, apparently out of spite, on Donald Trump's second day in office. On January 22nd, Ranking Member of the House Committee on Transportation, Rick Larson, Democrat from Washington State, and Ranking Member of the Subcommittee on Aviation, Steve Cohn, Democrat from Tennessee, released statements after President Trump froze the hiring of air traffic controllers. Quote, the bipartisan FAA Reauthorization Act of 2024 directs the administration to hire the maximum number of air traffic controllers. That's what the law says, so the administration must rescind this ridiculous executive order, said Ranking Member Larson, adding that hiring air traffic controllers is the number one safety issue, according to the entire aviation industry. Instead of working to improve aviation safety and lower costs for hardworking American families, the administration is choosing to spread bogus DEI, or diversity, equity, and inclusion, claims in order to justify this decision. Again, this was on January 22nd. I'm not surprised by the president's dangerous and divisive actions, said Larson, but the administration must reverse course. Let's go back to aviation safety and allow the FAA to do its job protecting the flying public. Ranking Member Cohn said, quote, our top priority must be the safety of the flying public. So an order freezing the hiring of air traffic controllers is a misguided decision and goes against the directives of our FAA reauthorization bill. The aviation community will speak with one voice in condemning this short-sighted policy and reaffirming our commitment to hiring the critical personnel necessary for ensuring public safety. In fact, as President Biden's Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg noted today, the administration had sought even more money for the hiring of more air traffic controllers, but the effort was blocked by Republicans in Congress. On January 28, just this past Tuesday, a threatening retirement deferment resignation program email, described by many in the media as a buyout offer, was sent to about 2 million federal employees, which we will discuss in detail with my guest shortly, instructing federal workers to simply type the word resign into an email subject line, send it back to them to effectuate their resignation. On January 29th, the day after, the first mid-air collision in 16 years in the skies above Washington, D.C., where there was, for some reason, a shortage of air traffic controllers on duty at Reagan National that night at the time of the collision. Now, I don't know if any of that has anything to do with this tragedy that is still unwinding at this hour. Some, like Josh Marshall at TPM, have said, quote, when you suddenly start tearing through the air safety bureaucracy with an axe after two decades plus of near perfect U.S. commercial air safety, any plane that suddenly careens out of the sky is probably on you. I don't know that I necessarily agree with him, at least not right now, at this moment, hours after the crash. It's probably too early to blame anyone or anything, particularly with a president who has been in office less than 2 weeks, any president. However, all of the facts that I just detailed for you are true facts. They are actual facts. And as noted, I was disinclined to even point them out right now because just sort of reporting those facts kind of makes it sound like Donald Trump is somehow to blame for what happened. And I think that such a charge would be premature right now. That said, apparently, it's not too early to begin the blame game after all, according to Donald Trump. Even if you have zero facts or evidence to back up your obnoxious allegations while people are still being pulled out of the river. President Trump, in a press briefing at the White House on Thursday, blamed diversity or so-called DEI requirements at the Federal Aviation Administration, and he blamed his two Democratic predecessors for the mid-air collision over the Potomac River on Wednesday night, according to the New York Times, saying that standards for air traffic controllers had been too lax. For the record, his two immediate predecessors were actually Joe Biden and a guy by the name of Donald Trump. Trump cited no evidence for his charges and even admitted when pressed that the investigation had only just begun.
On DEI and the claims that you've made, are you saying this crash was somehow caused and the result of diversity hiring? And what evidence have you seen to support these claims?
It just could have been. We have a high standard. We've had a higher, much higher standard than anybody else. And there are things where you have to go by brain power. You have to go by psychological quality, and psychological quality is a very important element of it.
Moments later, he blamed the pilots of the Army helicopter that appeared to fly into that passenger jet that was on final approach to Reagan National across the river from the Capitol. He had, in fact, already begun doing that within about an hour or so of the crash on Wednesday night. On social media, based on a grainy, dark video showing not much more than an explosion at the moment of impact in the dark skies over the Potomac in D.C. Trump went back and forth between blaming diversity goals that he said were created by President Barack Obama and President Joe Biden, and then saying that an investigation was necessary. His instant focus on diversity reflected his instinct to immediately frame major events through his political or ideological lens, whether the facts fit or not.
Today, blamed the diversity elements, but then told us that you weren't sure that the controllers made any mistake. You then said perhaps the helicopter pilots were the ones who made the mistake.
It's all under investigation.
I understand that. That's why I'm trying to figure out how you can come to the conclusion right now that diversity had something to do with this crash.
Because I have common sense, okay? And unfortunately, a lot of people don't. We want brilliant people doing this. This is a major chess game at the highest level. When you have 60 planes coming in during a short period of time and they're all coming in different directions, and you're dealing with very high-level computer work and very complex computers.
So you get what you can hear that dog whistle, right? Loud and clear.
Yeah.
We need brilliant people. We don't need diverse people. We need, you know, white men. Not women, not black people. Dealing with these complex computers? The Times' David Sanger writes, it is something that he has done before. After a terrorist attack in New Orleans a month ago, he blamed illegal immigration, even though the attacker was a U.S. citizen born in Texas. When asked how he could say that diversity hiring was to blame for the crash, as you heard, even though basic facts about the mid-air collision were still being sought by investigators, he said, quote, because I have common sense. For some jobs, we need the highest level of genius, he said. So, by the way, this high-level genius is the very same guy who had the common sense to publish full-page ads in the newspapers back in the 1980s, calling for the execution of five young black and Hispanic men to kill them for the rape of a jogger in Central Park, despite the fact that those five young men were eventually completely cleared and exonerated of all charges. And to this day, this high-level genius has not apologized for that common sense that he displayed regarding the Central Park Five, who are now known as the Exonerated Five. One of those now grown men, by the way, who were eventually freed from jail. One of them freed after being proven innocent. One of them has gone on to elected office as a New York City commissioner. Donald Trump wanted them dead, has never apologized. Of the FAA under President Obama, Trump said during his appalling and embarrassing press briefing at the White House, quote, they actually came out with a directive, too white. No, they didn't come out with such a directive. That is, of course, a lie. An audio recording of the air traffic controller's warnings to the helicopter just before the crash indicated that a controller first warned the helicopter to look for a Canadian jet and then told the helicopter pilot to go behind the jet as it was landing. That exchange will, of course, be a part of the investigation, which is just beginning. Trump appeared in the White House briefing room with Vice President J.D. Vance. The newly sworn-in Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy and the Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth, all three high-level geniuses who began their comments by praising Donald Trump's leadership and repeating that they would eliminate diversity requirements, so-called DEI programs, and focus on competence. Well, at least for everyone else's jobs, if not their own. Hegseth, of course, being a recent DUI hire by Trump, apparently. Trump also named a new acting head of the Federal Aviation Administration during that news conference. Oh. None had been. Isn't that nice?
Yeah, he got around to it finally.
None had been appointed by him until Thursday after the crash. That appointee did not speak at the news conference, however, nor did the head of the National Transportation Safety Board. Might have been nice to hear from them. He was also in the room, despite the tragic crash having occurred less than 24 hours earlier. Don't let those men speak. Anyway, I'm going to leave all that here for now. I suspect we will come back to it in the days ahead, but that is our new president, a sick, twisted little man who I guess wanted to get out in front of the facts that I just detailed for you so that he could blame someone else rather than be blamed appropriately or otherwise himself. But as appalling as this shameful display was, it's just one piece of Trump's disgusting treatment of federal workers whose administration, as noted earlier this week, attempted to remove from public service pretty much every single one of them in every executive agency was something that appeared to be some sort of a buyout or, more accurately, a deferred resignation program, an offer that they might want to take before he simply fires them, legally or otherwise. Both of those efforts appear to be unlawful, which is not surprising for a president who does not give a damn about the rule of law. And we will discuss all of that with a representative from the nation's largest federal employees union next. That and then later, Desi Doyen's latest Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman. You are listening to The Bradcast.
The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Programming at WEFT is brought to you in part by Cinema Gallery in downtown Urbana. A proud supporter of WEFT, Cinema Gallery is located at 120 West Main Street in the historic Urbana Cinema and represents 52 professional artists of the Midwest. For more information, visit cinemagallery.cc or follow Cinema Gallery on Instagram.
To do your dirty work. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to do your dirty work no more.
No more. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Earlier in the week, late on Monday night, as you likely know by now, the Trump administration's White House Office of Management and Budget issued a stunning two-page memo declaring that all grants and other funding to thousands and thousands of organizations in all 50 states would be suspended as of the next night, Tuesday at 5 p.m. The order would have stopped payments for, among other things, Medicaid to some 70,000 low-income Americans, disaster relief, farm aid, student loan programs, Head Start, daycare centers, Meals on Wheels for the elderly, highway funds, nutrition assistance, rent assistance, cancer treatment programs, life-saving medicine for millions with HIV around the world, veterans, suicide prevention hotlines, food inspections, and scores of other very popular programs. The hue and cry from the public, from red and blue states alike, and yes, even from the corporate media against this ill-considered scheme by the Trump administration was so loud that by Wednesday morning, the administration issued another memo, this one just two lines long, declaring OMB Memorandum M2513 is rescinded. Victory. Later, the White House press secretary made matters worse by posting to the site still known as Twitter, quote, "This is not a rescission of the federal funding freeze," Leavitt posted on the press secretary, Carolyn Leavitt, posted on X, quote, "It is simply a rescission of the OMB memo," whatever the hell that might mean. The court case, which put a temporary stay on the original memo, hopefully will unpack all of that in the days ahead. At least I'm guessing, hoping. But amidst all of that confusion, something else happened that received a bit less coverage and or hue and cry, though it is both equally outrageous and has a similar ability to cripple all manner of public services across the country. The Trump administration appeared on Tuesday to offer roughly 2 million federal workers the option to resign but be paid through the end of September in what many outlets reported at the time, inaccurately it seems, as a buyout offer. As the New York Times notes, the offer is part of an effort by the administration to drastically reduce the size of the federal workforce and push out people who do not support President Trump's political agenda. In an email, the Office of Personnel Management, or OPM, an agency that oversees the federal civilian workforce, gave employees the option to leave their positions by typing the word resign into the subject line of an email and hitting send, giving workers until February 6th to accept that offer. Of course, if they don't accept that offer, it is believed many of those career federal workers will simply be fired at some point, as Trump has vowed to shut down federal agencies and cull the federal workforce by, well, at least according to Project 2025, hundreds of thousands in virtually every federal agency. The email sent to workers with the subject line, quote, "fork in the road," said the majority of federal agencies would probably be downsized and that a substantial number of employees would be furloughed or reclassified to, quote, "at-will status," essentially making them easier to fire. Most people who have been working remotely would be required to work from their office 5 days a week, the email said, and some physical offices would be consolidated, causing some people to be relocated. Better take that offer, I guess, right? The message also said that, quote, "enhanced standards of conduct would be applied to ensure that workers were, quote, reliable, loyal, and trustworthy," and warned that, quote, "at this time, we cannot give you full assurance regarding the certainty of your position or agency." Better take that offer, right? The email amounted to a frontal assault on the federal bureaucracy, which Trump has long derided as the deep state and has sought to bend to his will. The move also risked gutting the staffs of a wide array of federal agencies that Americans depend on, though federal unions immediately condemned the offer and many federal employees viewed it as a trick. In fact, the message echoed an email that the billionaire Elon Musk, considered by many to be Trump's co-president at this point, sent to Twitter employees after buying the social media platform back in late 2022 with the very same subject line, "fork in the road," and a similar offer to give severance to those willing to leave before they are fired. In that case, 3 months severance. In this case, at least as the memo suggests, 7 months severance if they choose to voluntarily quit. Almost every facet of the government could be significantly affected by mass resignations, and a culling of the federal workforce would have wide-reaching impacts on the lives of many Americans. Regular activities like traveling, renewing passports, or filing for a tax return could be delayed or disrupted. The operation of national parks and museums and the administration of benefits like Social Security, Medicare, veterans care, food stamps could also be affected. Regulators and inspectors for food, water, drugs, and workplace safety could also leave the government if workers accept this offer. Among the government employees who could turn in their resignation are skilled researchers and doctors, environmental, nuclear, and rocket scientists, and meteorologists at the National Weather Service. Depending on how the Trump administration defines national security, officers at law enforcement agencies like the FBI and Drug Enforcement Administration could also resign. But in the hours after the mass email was reportedly sent to every federal worker, many began to warn that this supposed offer was in fact a trick, that workers wouldn't actually be allowed to quit their jobs over the next 7 months, and that the federal law doesn't even actually allow the email's promised payments. Senator Tim Kaine, Democrat of Virginia, a state that hosts a large chunk of the federal workforce, denounced the offer, comparing it to Donald Trump's historic record of promising to pay contractors before then reneging on the deals after the work was done.
So my message to federal employees who receive this is, yeah, the president has tried to terrorize you for about a week and then gives you a little sweetheart offer. If you resign in the next week, we're just going to pay you for doing nothing for the next 7 months. Don't be fooled. He's tricked hundreds of people with that offer. If you accept that offer and resign, he'll stiff you just like he stiffed the contractors. He doesn't have any authority to do this. Do not be fooled by this guy. You were here before he was here, and you'll be here after he was here. Show up for work, be diligent, serve Americans every day, make their life better, answer their phone call, give them an answer, track down their constituent call. Don't be fooled by a fake offer.
Don't be fooled by a fake offer. The American Federation of Government Employees, or AFGE, the largest union of federal employees representing more than 800,000 workers, quickly condemned the move. Quote, "There are more Americans than ever who rely on government services," said Everett Kelly, the president of the union, "purging the federal government of dedicated career civil servants will have vast unintended consequences that will cause chaos for Americans who depend on a functioning federal government." Jacqueline Simon is the policy director of the American Federation of Government Employees, representing AFGE on all policy matters affecting the union's members, including civil service protections, collective bargaining, privatization, pay, and much more. She joins us now. Jackie Simon, welcome back to the broadcast.
Well, thank you for having me.
All right. We saw at least some of this likely coming when we spoke to you back in September before last year's election about what was likely to happen in a second Trump term, his reinstatement of so-called Schedule F in hopes of making it easier to fire federal workers, which also seems to be underway. We'll talk about that, too. But I'm not sure anybody foresaw what happened this week with this email, which, frankly, Jackie, I still find very confusing. Maybe that's on purpose. Can you explain both what the email pretends to offer, but what it really seems to mean for federal workers who accept this so-called deferred resignation program that doesn't actually appear to be a buyout, as originally reported by many in the media?
Well, I think you've done a pretty good job of describing it. I think no one knows for sure exactly what authority they think they're operating under. Uh-huh. But I think, you know, one of the, you talked about a lot, many aspects, and why don't we start with the fact that there's a barely veiled threat inside the email, mm-hmm. where they say, you know, if you stay, you're going to be held to a new, higher set of standards of conduct that involve assessing your trustworthiness and loyalty. Mm-hmm. And, I think that that is a threat that we're going to, if you remain, mm-hmm. and we suspect you of disloyalty to Donald Trump, you'll be fired anyway. And this way, you don't have to get fired. You can go for 8 months with your salary and your benefits and stay away from your job for the most part. A few people would have to you know, come to work until they call it transitioning, and which is ironic.
Ironic,
because I think they're scrubbing emails for words that they connect to DEI. But in any case, they seem to be suggesting take this or and if we judge you to be disloyal, you'll be fired anyway. But I think you covered it all in your intro. Well, you know, there's no guarantee whatsoever that anyone would ever see any of that money because Congress would have to approve it. They don't have the money. The federal government right now is operating under a continuing resolution that expires in the middle of March. They would have to get the Congress to appropriate money to pay whatever number of people agreed to this so-called offer for 8 months. Pay and benefits to do no work for the American people. I'm not so sure members of Congress would be so quick to do that. I'm not sure it would be real popular with their constituents.
Well, it's also interesting that, you know, essentially, if you tell us you want to resign and then they can't end up doing what they promised to do, well, now we know that these are disloyal people who want out anyway. Or if you stay, well, you might be fired anyway because we're just culling all the work for it. And I mean, it seems like a lose-lose situation. And my understanding is that there is a provision in federal law to allow certain agencies to downsize for very specific reasons, and up to $25,000 can be paid to those whose jobs are cut. But that's it. There is no money to pay off 8 months worth to all of these people. That would be a lot higher than $25,000. No.
Well, it's as you say, it's complex. Department of Defense has authority to pay $40,000 to people who hold jobs that the department decides it no longer needs. And that's not what is said in this memorandum. Other agencies besides the Department of Defense can only offer up to $40,000. However, it's interesting to, in anticipation of this, we've seen a list of things that the Republicans would like to see in the reconciliation package. And one of the things was to raise that amount to $40,000 for everybody. But that's a digression. In any case, you know, the laws about eliminating positions because there's no work or there's no funding for that position are really sort of supposed to be the prelude to offering any kind of a separation incentive or a buyout. And there doesn't seem to be any kind of sense that in the email that if you abandon your position, you resign your position, that it won't be filled by somebody else. And that's where they'll have some legal problems because, you know, if they have no intention whatsoever of backfilling positions that they, you know, riff people for, that'll be a problem.
So,
but, you know, they're not really worrying about the rules. They're not really worrying about the law.
Right.
And if they are challenged and they do have to pay judgments, it's going to be the American people that pay. It's not coming out of Elon Musk's pocket. It's not coming out of Trump's pocket. It's coming out of your pocket and mine.
What is AFGE's official position on this? What guidance have you offered to your worker members concerning whether they should accept this offer or not?
We don't provide legal advice as a policy matter. You know, we can't say to our members, and we don't choose to say to our members, do not take this offer. It's a fraud. It's a phony offer. It's a bad idea. We say we think you should be very, very careful and, you know, talk to your own lawyer, talk to your financial advisor, talk to your union rep, and make sure you really understand what the risks are before you even consider accepting this, because I don't know, we don't really know what the legal status of this so-called offer is, if it really is an offer in the legal sense of the word. So it's We don't come right out and say, do not do this.
Right.
But we say, please, please take a deep breath and think this through.
Yeah.
And don't jump at it.
I imagine it's causing a lot of chaos and anxiety and confusion for folks there. Have some of your members, do you know, have some of your members responded, taken this offer?
I would say, you know, you expect it would be chaos and confusion, mm-hmm. And fear, but the only thing I've really seen or heard is anger. Mm. At the insult, anger at the implied threats. Mm. I don't think anybody's really scared.
Good.
Per se. Good. They know that these two are bullies who really don't do much in the way of follow through.
Now, Trump has also, as part of his flurry of executive orders in his first week, I believe, signed an order that supposedly reinstitutes the so-called Schedule F for public workers. We talked a little bit about that, Jackie Simon, last September when you were on. I think that AFG this week joined with several other unions to file suit against his use of an executive order to give himself the right, essentially, as I understand it, to fire career civil servants without cause. Can you explain what Schedule F is and if it now actually gives the Trump administration that authority to, and again, these are not political hires, these are career professionals. Do I understand that correctly?
Well, they changed the name from Schedule F. It's not called Schedule F anymore. It's called Schedule PC. Policy career, or uh-huh. politically correct, I uh-huh. guess, is what they really mean to imply. I think one of the really concerning elements of that executive order, because they changed it from the version that was issued in 2020. This time, as part of the executive order, they rescinded a regulation that was issued according to law, going through the entire process that you have to go through in order to issue a regulation. Mm-hmm. They simply rescinded that regulation via executive order. Mm. And that regulation that the Office of Personnel Management issued, I guess it was last year, said that, okay, you can create this new schedule. You can expand the accepted service in this way. We're not challenging the president's authority to do that in this regulation. But if you do so, the people who already occupy those positions would retain their rights. Prospectively, when somebody else was hired into that reclassified position, they would have no rights. But the people who were already in those jobs would keep their rights. And the executive order just said that regulation has no force. We will not be recognizing it, and it's gone. And so, you know, when you talk about Elon Musk and his DOGE and all that other kind of stuff, you know, they talked about how it would be used to cut the federal workforce, but they also talked a lot about deregulation, and that's gotten a little less attention. Mm-hmm. And there's deregulation that goes through the regulatory process, and there's deregulation by fiat.
Right.
And in this executive order, he's killed a regulation in a way that does not seem lawful.
And you can't just kill. I mean, essentially, creating a regulation is a long process. There's a public comment period. There's all sorts of things. Takes quite a while. And it also takes that long to change the regulation, to undo them as well. Right.
You can put it on a fast track, but
not this fast.
It takes months,
right?
And you do have a public comment period. You've got mm-hmm. notice and comment, and they didn't do that. They just said it's no longer in force.
And so this is what part of the lawsuit that I guess you guys filed along with some other unions and groups.
Yeah.
Your
yes.
National president, Everett Kelly, said, mm-hmm. quote, "Together we can stop the efforts to fire hundreds of thousands of experienced, hardworking Americans who have dedicated their careers to serving the country and prevent these career civil servants from being replaced with unqualified political flunkies loyal to the president, but not the law or constitution." Well, I wish you luck with that lawsuit. But Jackie, I believe we played this clip before you go. We played this when you joined us back in September. But here's J.D. Vance in 2021, now the vice president, but then a U.S. Senate candidate in Ohio, discussing what he thought Trump should do with federal workers if he became president again, and what he should do if the courts ruled against a wholesale culling of the federal workforce.
We should just seize the administrative state for our own purposes. We should fire all of the people. I mean, I think that what Trump should do, like if I was giving him one piece of advice, fire every single mid-level bureaucrat, every civil servant in the administrative state, replace them with our people. And when the courts, because you will get taken to court, and then when the courts stop you, stand before the country like Andrew Jackson did and say the Chief Justice has made his ruling, now let him enforce it.
That guy is now Donald Trump's vice president, Jackie. I know you guys are suing the administration. I know you hope that you will win, but even if you do, is it too early to have concerns that this administration will also simply start to ignore court rulings when it comes to this?
Well, either that or they'll get the court ruling that they want, which will give them the power to do exactly as J.D. Vance was describing there. So, you know, I think we'll hope for the best, but prepare for the worst.
Has the administration already started removing career federal workers that they are not allowed to remove? Or is this lawsuit just a preemptive shot?
Yes, they have. There are people who've already been fired and when they get fired in their termination notice, there's no allegation of misconduct or poor performance, no suggestion that the work they did is no longer necessary. They just cite the president's authority under Article 2 of the Constitution. Goodbye.
Wow. I'm going to have to end that there. Just a reminder that views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of a speaker who do not necessarily represent those of WEFT, Champaign, Prairie Air Incorporated, Station Management, the Board of Directors, or the WEFT Associates. Essentially wraps up here this programming of where we're at here on WEFT, Champaign, 90.1 FM. And of course, as always, stream us online at WEFT.org or go to the WEFT-FM, our app, at the Apple App Store or Google's Play Store, where you can download the app and listen to WEFT live anytime, anywhere. But yeah, that wraps it up here. I'm going to play... let's see. I got Blues Everywhere I Go from the album, Scott Shirley. So please keep listening to us here on WEFT 90.1 FM radio.
I won't be blue no more. Well, it's blues in my house, from my bedroom down to the ground. Say there's blues in my house, from my bedroom down to the ground. And it's blues everywhere, 'cause my good man has left this town.